from out Virginia. Don't let me wait. If you Catholic girl, start much too late. Oh, but sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Oh, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done.
Hi everyone, my name is Dr. Michael Wald and welcome to Ask the Blood Detective. This is the second show in my ongoing series here on PRN every Saturday at 1 o'clock, within which I'll describe all of the cutting-edge breakthrough concepts in terms of disease prevention, health maintenance, and very importantly, optimizing health. For those of you who missed my first show, during which I discussed many practical details about your laboratory tests and how you're compared to average and not healthy or optimal individuals, you'd want to go to the archives on PRN, listen to that show, or go to my website at www.integratednutritionny.com. Go to the blog section for the audio and for detailed notes, or you can go to blooddetective.com. And again, for those of you who missed the first show, I described that I was nicknamed the Blood Detective by the husband of a grateful patient who I diagnosed with a devastating neurologic disease after years of her trying to find answers. And I was able to do that quite quickly because of my Blood Detective philosophy and practical approach. And I'll describe much of that approach within today's show in a way that you can take it in your life and use it. I promise you that you will never hear a show like this one today that teaches you more practical, correct, and evidence-based information about what tests you need, what tests are just wrong, how tests are recommended inaccurately, how tests should be chosen for accuracy. All of this talk about testing has to do with figuring out what you need beyond a guess. There's no book out there or show that you're going to hear that's going to give specific nutritional and health advice for you, because these articles and these shows do not know you. They don't know your chemistry, your genetics, your health goals, your likes, dislikes, etc. Now, let's move beyond the testing concept. That's the first show. And let me talk today about what vitamins are and what vitamins are not. I call the show Vitamin Lies: What's True and What is False. So, these are questions that many of you have submitted to me over the last several months that you want to know the answers to. So let's get into it. I'm going to start with some sobering statistics because it's occurred to me that there's an awful lot of negative press about vitamins, and I do not understand how the average individual can make any sense of them. They're confusing to me at times, and I've been doing this for 26 years. So one of these falsities that we hear in the press, the mainstream press, is that vitamins are dangerous. Well, based on my statistical research, I can tell you for a fact that there were no deaths from vitamins in 2011. There were no deaths in vitamins from vitamins in 2012 or from in 2013. Meanwhile, according to one statistic, 106,000 deaths occur every year from pharmaceutical drugs. You know, we do hear about deaths from drugs in the mainstream media, but certainly not to the point where people have any concept of how dangerous pharmaceutical drugs are, even when they're prescribed correctly. Here's another statistic. Between 76,000 and 137,000 deaths from pharmaceutical drugs occur in hospitalized patients every single year. The FDA and its quackbusters seem to go after vitamins, demeaning them as unproven remedies, and as far as I can see, take every possible opportunity to warn people against the quote-unquote alternatives, meaning vitamins and minerals, herbs, that sort of thing, on the basis that they're not scientifically supported and that they're outright dangerous. I can tell you as a researcher that there are hundreds of thousands of good studies, evidence-based studies on the use of vitamin supplements, mineral supplements, herbal supplements, and certain diets that can be found right in the National Laboratory of Sciences database. which goes back from 1966 to the present with over 3 million citations. So this concept of no proof is a lie. It is an outright lie. So another statistic you should be aware of is that the most recent data from the U.S. National Poison Data Controls Annual Report, which tracked data from 57 U.S. poison centers, showed that vitamin and mineral supplements caused zero deaths in 2010, the year of that particular report. And according to Orthomolecular Medicine News Service, Americans easily take more than 60 billion doses of nutritional supplements every year with zero related deaths. I mean, that's amazing. I think more people choke on ham sandwiches than they do taking their supplements. Well over half of the United States population takes nutritional supplements. It's amazing to me that we're not dropping like flies then. Even if each of these people took only one single tablet a day, that makes 165 million individual doses per day for a total of over 60 billion doses of supplements annually. And since many people, including myself, take far more than just one single vitamin or mineral tablet, actual consumption of nutrition in the form of supplements is considerably higher than these numbers. Therefore, the safety of nutritional supplements is remarkably, remarkably well established. Over 60 billion doses of vitamin and mineral supplements per year are taken in the U.S. Not a single fatality. That's what you need to know. Not one. So again, if vitamin and mineral supplements are allegedly so dangerous as the FDA and the media so often claim, then again, where are the bodies? Somebody please show me the bodies. Now, most of you listening to this show already have some nutrition knowledge, and you know that our common sense tells us and scientific evidence has been mounting and continues to mount that Americans consume, and I'm putting this very politely, a suboptimal diet. We consume, well, maybe not we, meaning you or I, but many Americans consume what's known as a SAD diet, S-A-D, Standard American Diet, and that is no joke. I can tell you from 26 years of testing that a good number of my patients, I'd say anywhere between 20% and 30%, suffer from nutritional deficiencies that when I look at their so-called SAD diet or the Standard American Diet, which is considered the diet that we should consume so that we do not suffer from nutritional deficiencies, people do have outright nutritional deficiencies and what are termed nutritional inadequacies, and I'll talk about those a little bit later. We have to keep in mind as well that even if it were somehow remotely true that the Standard American Diet provided all of the nutrition that we needed, we have to realize that, first of all, we are not what we eat. We are what we absorb from what we eat. And our ill health, if that is the state of your health right now, could have resulted from poor nutrition over time, or at least your health issues result in an increased nutritional need. So starting with a Standard American Diet will always be inadequate for just about anyone, in my opinion. Here's a true or false question that I received from one of you out there. True or false? High-quality nutritional supplements can potentially make up for poor diet. Is that true or false? Well, it's true and it's not true, actually. Of course, we want to eat a balanced diet, whatever that is. Good luck figuring that out, although there are ways, I should say. But it is a scientific fact that single nutrients in the form of supplements can help make up for an adequate diet. I'll give you several examples that most medical physicians certainly should know and most nutritionists know, that if someone is iron anemic, they may not be able to repair their iron by eating red meat or dark green leafy vegetables, so they take an iron supplement for their iron anemia. Until recently, it was recognized that calcium would be required for bone loss, either osteopenia or osteoporosis. Folic acid during pregnancy to prevent or offset the risk of birth defects, 80% of which are caused by either folic acid deficiencies, which I'm telling you is fairly rare. The issue is mostly a problem using folic acid, converting folic acid into an active form. And therefore, one would need to take a supplement of that active form because foods do not have countable amounts of the active form of folic acid, which is the L5-methyl tetrahydrofolate form of folic acid. We might need to take probiotics in concentrated pill form for our eczema or allergies or our gut problems. We might need magnesium for our muscle spasms, for example. We might need to take supplements of omega-3 fatty acids in either capsules or liquid form for eczema, allergy, immune problems, various cancers. The list goes on and on. Niacin, which is a vitamin B3 for lowering of cholesterol. B12 and folic acid for neuropathies or nerve issues such as degeneration, numbness, tingling, pain. We might take vitamin B3 for inflammatory bowel diseases, cardiovascular diseases, because we could not eat enough food to guarantee the amount. And for those of you thinking, no, I get plenty of sun, I'm good with vitamin D, you're probably wrong. Studies have shown that sun exposure, even for a few hours a day, over 50% of the body, often will not fix a vitamin D deficiency. And eating foods with vitamin D may not do it either, particularly if your blood level of vitamin D is lower than 30. We might need concentrated flavonoid supplements, which are very important plant products found in a variety of plants for everything from erectile dysfunction to anti-inflammatory and anti-cancer effects. We might need to take protein supplements in specific forms and specific types of proteins for different health problems. Again, I can go on and on and on. We know that nutritional supplementation can make up, in part at least, for a poor diet. When I work with patients, fundamentally, I'm looking to develop the most accurate, doable, and non-neurotic way of eating so that a person can maintain their health over a period of time, but that often involves providing nutritional supplements based upon laboratory testing, questionnaires, metabolic rate of the individual's health goals, genetics, and other factors. We'll talk about that more in a minute. Why don't I stop for a moment with the true or false questions, and let's talk about some of the basic things that I think every listener here should know about vitamins. Number one, vitamins are organic compounds. And being organic compounds, vitamins by definition cannot be produced or synthesized in the body and must be obtained from the diet. In human beings, there are 13 vitamins recognized as what are called fat-soluble and 9 water-soluble vitamins. Now, all vitamins must be converted into their active form in the body to get used. So, you know, most of my patients say, oh, it's very important, I understand, that vitamins be absorbed. Yes, of course it is important that vitamins are absorbed, but they then need to be activated. So, for example, cholecalciferol, vitamin D, must be turned into the active form of vitamin D3, 25-dihydroxy-D3. And then, depending on the circumstances and need in the body, there's a further conversion of vitamin D, the 25-dihydroxy, to the 125 form, which is very important in cancer, for example, and the role of vitamin D in cancer, making sure the highest level possible and the safest level for a given nutrient for a condition. So let me say that again. There are water-soluble nutrients and there are fat-soluble nutrients. Most nutrients need to be absorbed, of course all of them do, but most need to be converted into active forms in order to be used in the body for different health purposes. Many vitamins work in the body by acting upon what are known as coenzymes to control the rate of various chemical reactions. Many vitamins are obtained, as I said, from the foods we eat, but others are made from the intestinal flora in the gut. So those bacteria, the beneficial bacteria, make biotin and vitamin K, for example. Vitamin D, as most of us know, is made from UV light in the skin, converted from cholesterol. But again, as I mentioned just a minute ago, most people cannot maintain or reach an optimal level of vitamin D3 in the blood with sun exposure alone. And by the way, the optimal blood level of vitamin D that's associated with the lowest morbidity and mortality is a level of 70 of vitamin D. Most nutrients have an optimal dose. These concepts I'll be covering in most shows. And the first show, I had many examples of optimal vitamin dosing. Also, vitamin A is made from beta carotene, converted in the body approximately 1/6 of the beta carotene we consume from a carrot, for example, is converted into vitamin A. Carrots, by the way, do not contain vitamin A. They contain beta carotene. Most people don't seem to know that. And niacin, vitamin B3, is produced from the amino acid tryptophan. And most of us have heard of tryptophan and in milk, for example. Tryptophan is a precursor to serotonin, which is important for mood, behavior, sleep, pain control. And many of my patients, I have detected tryptophan malabsorption with a urinary test called Indikin. So if someone is malabsorbing tryptophan, they clearly will not produce enough niacin or B3. Okay, back to the true and false questions that many of you sent in. So true or false, is there a difference between a primary nutritional deficiency and a secondary nutritional deficiency? So clearly this question comes from someone who knows a little bit something about vitamin chemistry. So a primary vitamin or nutrient deficiency is when there's just not enough intake or production of the vitamin in the body. And a secondary deficiency is when there's an increased requirement of that nutrient in a person. So for example, if you have stress, lack of sleep, excessive exercise, certain genetic needs, you may reach certain diseases like cancer, heart disease, autoimmune disease, you name it, malabsorption, you will need much higher levels of nutrients, including vitamins and minerals, beyond average. And this is where many physicians and some nutritionists I've seen misinterpret laboratory work. They'll see that there are normal amounts of a given nutrient, but don't stop for a minute to say, is that normal amount optimal for that person? We wouldn't want a bodybuilder to have a normal amount of protein. They couldn't compete in bodybuilding. We do not want a cancer patient to have average levels of nutrition. They probably won't survive. So we need to optimize the nutrition given the situation. We need to choose the right nutrients in the right forms so they can not only be absorbed by the body, but activated in the body as well. And we need to do this for both water-soluble and fat-soluble nutrients. Another question I received was similar to the last one, and it is, what is the difference between a fat and water-soluble vitamin? Does it matter? Well, the true or false is, yes, it matters. Fat and water-soluble vitamins are stored very differently in the body. So examples of fat-soluble vitamins are vitamins A, D, vitamin E, vitamin K, omega-3 fats, coenzyme Q10, melatonin, lipoic acid. So these vitamins are mostly stored in the liver, and because they are either partly or fully fat soluble, they store for longer periods of time, and there is a far greater chance of creating excesses of the vitamins. On the other hand, of the 9 water-soluble vitamins that include the 8 B vitamins and also vitamin C, they're not stored very long in the body, and therefore constant intake is needed, particularly under stressful situations, stress of disease, stress of aging, stress of pollution. I think you get the picture. True or false? If we eat an optimal diet, isn't that enough? Do we need supplements in that case? I submit to you that even with an optimal diet, which let's just assume here we knew what that was, but we can guess that it has something to do with a person actually consuming what it is they need. Well, that may be true at a given time, but over the course of normal aging, and if there is disease or someone has health goals beyond average, then diet alone, in my opinion, is not enough. We need to take nutritional supplements. Supplements are convenient ways to fill in specific nutritional gaps. The next true or false question is there such a thing as vitamin synergism? Oh, you better believe it. I'm a big proponent of paying very careful attention to vitamin synergism, which is a fancy term for how nutrients are combined such that they work to their maximal or maximum potential. I'm going to have an entire show on vitamin synergism, but for the purpose of this true or false question, number one, yes, there is such a thing as vitamin synergism, such that a person taking a bag full of nutrients might need to take just a small number of those nutrients if they were combined properly, not just relative to themselves. In other words, how much vitamin B1 should be there with resveratrol compared to the boswellia or the turmeric content. There's a balance, a ratio. But then that all gets thrown out the window when we talk about the individual needs of the person. But through testing, questionnaires, conversation, it's definitely doable to figure out the best way to balance nutrients to maximize synergism, which allows for fewer nutrients to be taken with much more potential benefits. So rather than vitamin number one plus vitamin number two equaling, one plus one equals two, with synergism, one plus one might equal six in terms of potency if balanced correctly. True or false? An inadequate diet predisposes each of us to premature development of disease and therefore our overall morbidity and mortality. In other words, an inadequate diet will lead to a poor quality of life and also an increased risk of dying prematurely from preventable or delayable diseases. This is well established. That question is obviously true, that yes, an inadequate diet predisposes us to all kinds of bad stuff. True or false? Suboptimal diet predisposes us to infections, impairs tissue healing, leads to fatigue, and other health problems. Well, the person who submitted this question was simply trying to make a point. I'm clear that they know that yes, inadequate nutrition will adversely affect the immune system, predisposing us to all sorts of infections, poor healing, tissue repair, low cellular energetics, a fancy term for fatigue. Yes, it will. True or false? My doctor is the best healthcare professional to count on for reliable nutritional and dietary advice. Well, what do you think the response is to that? Okay, I can hear you even on the radio. The answer is an astounding no way. Unless your doctor or healthcare professional, a non-doctor professional, has specific advanced training in nutrition, that person is not the one to ask advice. This is why so many of my patients say, I asked my doctor about the use of these nutrients or this diet, and he or she, whatever, whether it's a man or a woman, well, they'll say to me, my doctor doesn't believe in vitamins. My first response is usually, this isn't a religion where we have to believe it. We have evidence and we have science that proves that we do, in fact, need nutritional supplementation, and diet makes a big difference in impacting our predisposition to disease and our ability to recover, our overall health. And if your doctor said what he or she said, then I would have to guess they have no training. Either that, or they're just plain stupid or ignorant. And I say that with a little bit of joking, but it's quite serious. It's very disheartening to me when I hear from a patient that their doctor has such a strong bias against nutrition, which simply means they have not looked at the literature, because I am not imagining tens of thousands of articles in the scientific literature. There's just no way. So we should all keep a few points in mind, and they are regarding nutritional supplements and when they come into play. When should you think about the use of nutritional supplements for any of you maybe doubting that? Well, if you're unable to eat well every day, you probably need nutritional supplements. If you've not eaten well for the first decade or two of your life, the very important time of life when optimizing nutrition sets the stage for future health or disease potential, you probably want to consider nutritional supplementation. Again, if you've not eaten well most of your life, many people think that just because they've cleaned up their diet and take nutritional supplements, it's been a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, that they solved all their past problems. And that usually proves to be untrue when I do blood detective detailed laboratory assessment. People still have old problems there lingering, which are contributing to their ill health currently. You should also think of nutritional supplements if you live in a toxic environment, because toxins increase our nutritional needs. And also, depending upon your genetics, just a brief word about genetics and genetic testing. Most of the genetic testing for nutrients are completely useless. I think one or two exceptions may be out there. One of the more notable exceptions of a test that is a genetic test that actually has some practical use is the MTHFR gene. So again, can't go into that now, but we're going to speak about that on further shows. If you smoke, you should be thinking of vitamin supplements. If you drink alcohol, any amount on any frequency. If you eat animal products, or if you've eaten products that contain growth hormone, antibiotics, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, gluten, GMO, or the typical American diet, you need extra nutritional supplements. If you have exposure to radiation, which we all do living on the planet Earth, certain temperature changes, electromagnetic influences, all of which create stress upon our nutritional balance. If you have a particular health problem, now, it may be true that you have a health problem that was not caused by nutritional deficiencies or inadequacies, but there is hardly a health problem that I am aware of that doesn't at least result in a greater need for nutrition, and often nutritional supplements are the only reliable way to get pharmaceutical levels of, and hopefully pharmaceutical-grade nutrients in the body. If you have emotional stress, emotional stress will increase our nutritional requirements across the board, since stress impacts every single organ, tissue, and gland in the body. I was just handed another question. It's really a request. Someone from the audience wants me to discuss a little bit more about why a medical physician does not seem to be in support of nutritional supplements. And this is, a very important concept here, because we trust our doctors, and when our doctors say that something is worthless or even harmful, and then we have someone in the nutrition field saying quite the opposite, that's very, very confusing. But I must be honest, most doctors, and of course I'm generalizing here, but this is mostly true. Your doctor probably does not understand or appreciate the concept of using nutrients in supplement form, whether it's herbs, vitamins, minerals, fatty acids, on any level, because the average medical school is limited to less than 30 hours of nutrition training. Now, if someone had less than, for example, if my dog walker had less than 30 hours, I never would have hired her. So I'm certainly not going to ask my medical physician with less than 30 hours of nutritional education for his or her advice. That is useless advice. And it's likely bias. So a combination of a nutritional visual exam, nutritional and health questionnaires, the appropriate nutritional testing read by the appropriately trained practitioner, that is the way to go. Let me read you some brief statements from the Center of Disease Control, the CDC, in a true or false format. Let me know what you think. So, which of the following statements are true and which are false? Micronutrients, like zinc, for example, chromium, manganese, are dietary components, often referred to as vitamins and minerals, which, although only required by the body in small amounts, are vital to development, disease prevention, and well-being. Well, that sounds like a reasonable statement, so the answer is true. What's not fully true about that statement is that some of these micronutrients may be required in greater than simply small amounts. This depends on the individual. Small, large, this is a semantic game. A person needs what they need for their needs. Small, large, we need what we need. Another statement from the CDC, micronutrients are not produced in the body and must be derived from the diet. That is true. Deficiencies in micronutrients such as iron, iodine, folic acid, vitamin A, zinc, may have devastating consequences. True or false? Of course, that is true. At least half of children worldwide ages 6 months to 5 years suffer from one or more micronutrient deficiencies, and globally more than 2 billion people are affected. Sadly, that is a true statement. And what concerns me is that Those are statistics that are actually known and recognized by people with limited nutrition knowledge. So if this is so apparent, the devastating effects worldwide of nutritional deficiencies, can you imagine how many people are walking around with deficiency symptoms that are just not textbook and not recognized by mainstream? Quite a lot. Here's the next true or false question. True or false? Does medicine believe in nutritional supplements? Well, on the surface, this question seems pretty straightforward and simple. But for many years, the American Medical Association, the AMA, had the policy and sent internal memos to physicians in the United States that they should take a stance that is anti-vitamin and that there was no proof. Decades later, as they were promoting the same rhetoric, they suddenly changed their minds. An article was published in one of the mainstream journals that got doctors' attention. It was picked up by the New York Times, and it basically said that men and women could increase their lifespan if they just took a multivitamin. And then the article presented many studies that supported the use of the various nutritional compounds found in a multivitamin. And it occurred to me that all of a sudden, no proof went from there is no proof to all of a sudden there's tons of proof, and here are the studies attached to this article. So, listen, let's not fool ourselves. This is a political and financially motivated position by the AMA. The AMA has since changed their position internally, but this hasn't necessarily trickled down to the individual medical provider because most, at least in my experience, have no concept, training, or belief in nutritional supplements at all. I will tell you from a personal perspective that the physicians that tend to embrace nutritional supplements and then start to espouse their benefits, again, supplements and adequate diet, or those doctors who they themselves end up with disease and come to see me. It seems that when a person is affected, belief systems tend to change. It is hard, I will admit, for a physician practicing within mainstream medicine to be able to recommend supplements because it may be against the office policy, the hospital policy. The practitioner may have some interest, but hasn't made the time or does not have the time to, you know, adequately train themselves. There is bias all over. And medicine does, of course, push medication. That is what it is fundamentally based on. Our so-called healthcare system, and I mean this with respect, it is not a healthcare system at all. There is very little, if any, health taught in medical schools. What is taught is disease care. So we have a disease care system. So when patients say to me, well, if nutrients and diet and all these things work so well, how come medicine doesn't use it? Well, that would make sense, but medicine simply doesn't make sense. I'll leave better hosts such as Gary Noll to go over the political ramifications and truths behind the morass of lies involved in suppressing the use of vitamins in mainstream medicine and the media. Another question is, where did the term vitamin come from? Well, that's a great question. The term vitamin is derived from vitamine, which is a word that was coined by a Polish biochemist by the name of Funk. And he worked at the Lister Institute of Preventative Medicine way back when. And again, the name is from vital, which means life, of course, and amine, which has to do with an amino acid. Except later on, it was discovered that most vitamins, they're actually not amino acids, but medicine, like so many things, does not change its tone and admit it's false. So vitamins are incorrectly called vital amines, even though they are not amino acids. True or false? Is there such a thing as antivitamins? Antivitamins, that's a great concept there. And the answer is yes. There are such thing as antivitamins, and they basically are chemical compounds that inhibit the absorption or action of various vitamins. So, for example, Avidin, a protein which is in egg whites, inhibits the absorption of biotin, which is in the B vitamin family. Pyrithamine is similar to pyridoxamine, which is vitamin B1, and that will inhibit the enzymes that the body needs to make, I should say, to activate B1. The next true or false is it true that people who eat a varied diet rarely suffer from nutritional deficiencies? Well, that's false. Even the best put-together diets will be inadequate at one point or another, in my opinion, and that's when we need nutritional supplements or at least a change in one's diet. True or false? Can special diets like a gluten-free or a GMO-free diet cause nutritional deficiencies? Well, the answer is yes, and I see this very often. You know, I have a practice full of very motivated, highly intelligent people who go to great lengths to improve their health, and many of them, I think quite correctly, have removed themselves from gluten and many from GMOs. But what is very common that I also see is that many people do not recognize the nutritional deficiencies that result from removing these foods and do not make up for them. In fact, many people say, well, I feel fine. Wouldn't I feel sick if I had a nutritionally inadequate diet? Well, the answer is yes, but generally you feel well before you get sick, and that could be a delay of weeks or months or even years. So I make it my business as the blood detective to check labs and tests to look for nutritional deficiencies that have resulted from, on the surface, very smart attempts at improving one's health and well-being, like removing gluten or GMO. Even though I have gone so far as to put together balanced nutritional recipes of gluten and GMO-free food choices, people still will develop nutritional deficiencies that I've uncovered on testing that we have to make up for with changes in the diet or supplementation. True or false? Is it true that a vitamin deficiency is most common in third world countries and not so common in developing countries? Well, here's an analogy. You know, way back when, if someone had an intestinal problem like chronic diarrhea, one of the first questions the doctor would ask is, well, have you visited a foreign country? Have you exited the country? Because they're thinking that third world countries are loaded with parasites. And that's potentially true, except there are plenty of parasites here too, and food poisoning and all sorts of bugs in our food supply. So it's not just third world countries. The same is true of vitamin deficiencies. I can tell you from actual testing on real people that grew up and live in the United States, even those that make extreme attempts at improving their diets, that nutritional deficiencies do exist, and they are frequently not uncovered and managed correctly because traditional physicians are simply not testing for them. And then they don't know how to test. We're going to talk about in a little while the testing errors made by physicians when very highly motivated people and patients of these doctors ask, oh, can you do this vitamin level or that vitamin level? There's much I need to say about that. Here's a question that was asked already somewhat, but I want to expand on it a bit. So my doctor says I do not need to take nutritional supplements. Is this true or false? Well, that's a matter of opinion, and I value opinions, but not ignorant opinions. So I'd have to say overall no. Even the most balanced diet on the surface, on paper, does not guarantee it contains the nutritional compounds that you're looking to get out of those foods. No, or you might malabsorb them, or you might have increased needs beyond a perfectly balanced diet on paper. So there's a lot of ignorance, there's a lot of bias in these untrained practitioners. And it is up to the healthcare consumer, which is you, to fill in the educational gap and advocate for yourself and seek out practitioners who are like-minded. Once again, all one needs to do is check the right laboratory tests. But I do admit that lab isn't everything. It doesn't always show all the nutritional problems. That's why questionnaires and a nutritional visual exam is very important. I'll have a whole show on how you can simply look at yourself in the mirror from head to toe and figure out a lot of nutritional problems right there. Then you can compare what you see to testing and really know what's true and what is false, so you can develop a lifestyle plan to focus on those things. True or false, this listener asks, the nutritional supplements that I take now, will they always be appropriate for me throughout my life? The answer is no, because as I said earlier, the normal aging process will affect our nutritional needs, causing malabsorption or just an increased need due to the increased degenerative stress placed upon aging body tissues. There's also changes in the environment or exercise levels, stress, there may be medications involved, other lifestyle factors, other medical health factors. Therefore, our nutritional needs in the form of diet and supplements need to change along with our changing needs. This is why I tend to promote laboratory and assessment testing every 3 months or so on average with people, because that way you can uncover problems when they're just starting. If you test less frequently or you check basic fundamental things that most regular physicians check, you won't find most of these problems. And people are astounded when their health tanks. They're like, how did this happen? My labs were normal. My doctor said they were fine. Well, that's very easy to say when the inadequate tests were performed or your doctor isn't trained in even recognizing nutritional problems. The other thing that patients will say to me is, they'll say, Dr. Wald, I've had every test under the sun. And I look at their tests and it's not even close. And many of the tests for nutrition are wrong tests. Sometimes the person had asked their doctor to, for example, check their mercury level, and the doctor will measure, let's say, their serum mercury, but that is not an accurate test for mercury burden. And then if the test is positive, the doctor generally doesn't know what to do about it. So we'll likely have a whole show on heavy metal and toxicity testing as well, because this is an area of much confusion in my experience. People are wasting a lot of money and a lot of time on metal detoxification based on erroneous test results. Here's a good question, a very fundamental one. How do I know if I'm taking the right nutritional supplements? Well, see an expert. You can't know based on how you feel, and too many of us rely on just on how we feel. You know, I had a beautiful young patient in, I believe she was in her mid-40s, come to see me, and I asked her what she was in for, and she said that she had metastatic cancer. She had no pain. She had no limitations, and her lab work was horrific. So my point is, you cannot go by how you feel. See an expert. Get testing done that does testing in all major body areas. The gastroenterology area, the immune area, the infectious disease area, the nutritional levels, tests of nutritional use, the hormonal or endocrine area. I test in all major areas because I want to see the whole puzzle. No matter how good a given specialist is, think of that specialist as one really good puzzle piece. It's only a piece. It can never be better than the piece. Plus, even when some of my patients have motivated their doctors to do a bunch of these tests, those doctors aren't talking with other types of docs. So the compartmentalization of medicine and the compartmentalization of knowledge, therefore, does not allow these practitioners to often get the big picture. It sounds cliche, getting the big picture, but it is true. Here's another true or false. What makes a nutritional supplement a good supplement? Well, many of you might remember that last year the New York State Attorney General's Office examined many store-bought supplements, and in a nutshell, and in an article that appeared in the New York Times entitled What's in Those Supplements, they found that most supplements did not have anything in them at all of what appeared on the label. This is something most people have forgotten already, because they come to me taking lousy quality supplements. So not all supplements are the same. They may not contain the product. And if they do, the processing is important. If you're going to take a fatty acid, for example, that was processed with heat, or probiotic processed with heat, that is not acceptable. You kill off and denature much of the nutritional compound. The supplements need to be close to or based upon your health and biochemical needs. Otherwise, they're not good supplements. Another related question that people ask me, well, aren't liquid supplements somehow better than tablets or capsules? Well, think of it this way. I'm just going to say it straight out. If you take a crappy nutrient and you liquefy it, it's still crap. So it doesn't matter the form of the supplement, it matters the quality. So good supplements must have quality control measures and they must be balanced synergistically. A talented healthcare provider with adequate training will be able to take various supplements and put them together in the most appropriate way for the individual. So the next question is related, true or false. Is it really necessary to combine nutrients in a balanced way for optimal effects? Or is it just an impractical concept? No, it's not an impractical concept. It may be difficult for the average individual without help, but it is not only possible, it is the best thing to do if you have a chronic or persistent health problem, is to balance supplementation. So with all the different tests, the questionnaires, the things that I've discussed, supplements can be put together in a way that optimizes their effects. Next, true or false. Is it true that we are what we eat? Well, we've said this a few times. We are absolutely not what we eat. We are the consequences of what we do not absorb, or in the case of nutrient activation, activate from what we eat. True or false? Can nutritional supplements make up for a poor or inadequate diet? We answered this question before. The answer is yes and no, but mostly no. If you have a terrible diet, it's not optimal or even smart for you to take supplements to make up for that. Although I do have patients that will not change their diets. In that case, yes, we can make up for things pretty close with supplements. I, at least, always want to start with optimizing the diet and then synergistically combining nutritional supplements to make up for dietary inadequacies. So we can make up for certain aspects of an inadequate diet, but it's not optimal. True or false? Are animal studies accurate for extrapolating human nutritional needs? Well, the answer to that question is not usually, but they should serve as a guide, and only as a guide. For example, many studies involve feeding animals an otherwise adequate diet, but that's void of one particular nutrient that the scientists are studying. So it's generally assumed that a diet where you remove one vitamin, let's say, will create a deficiency of only that vitamin so that you can study it. Sounds reasonable, except it's not true. For example, if you remove all B1 from the diet of a rat, they may suffer from deficiency signs and symptoms that are consistent with many of the B vitamins because all of these nutrients work synergistically together. This is why I prefer to design health plans based upon what a person needs for what they need. I look at the labs, I look at the questionnaires, I examine the person, we discuss their current health issues, their health goals, and we figure out what they need. We provide it to them. Then we recheck the tests and figure it out one person at a time. You are a study only compared to yourself. You compared to you, not compared to some average statistical man or woman that never lived. The average 70 kilogram man or 60 kilogram woman never came into my office. So very important concept there in terms of figuring out what a person needs biochemically. True or false, are plasma or serum vitamin tests accurate for figuring out nutritional deficiencies? The answer is no. By and large, they are not. People ask me all the time, can you check my vitamin levels? And I say, well, most of the vitamin levels only tell us your intake of that nutrient for a day or two or three at most. And they're quite surprised. They say, oh, really? Wow. So in a moment, I'm going to give you a few quick examples in the time we have left of the best vitamin tests for certain vitamins. The next true or false question is, what are my top vitamin tests? Okay, so let's talk about what some of these tests are. Some of the best nutritional tests or vitamin tests, and when I say vitamin, I mean that generically to encompass vitamins, minerals, enzymes, amino acids, and then food stuffs, as they call them, the macronutrients, the protein, carbs, and fats. Sometimes you want to check a level of a different nutrient, like what's the blood level of, let's say, vitamin D. But if you want to know a good test for predicting morbidity and mortality, That would be a body composition. That is not a vitamin test. That's a test of measuring your metabolic rate, which tells me the percentage of muscle, water, or fat in the body, and that helps me dose nutrients in a lot of detail. The same thing for a bone density test, except I do not use DEXA scan radiation bone exposure. I use sonogram. But bone is made mostly of protein, the major bricks, if you will, in the bone are calcium, but there's also magnesium bricks and strontium bricks and folic acid bricks and various, you know, mineral bricks. So bone density is a nutritional test as well. Urinary vitamin C levels, very, very important. Blood levels are not accurate for detecting nutritional deficiencies of vitamin C or optimizing the dose. So what has to happen is that if a person has enough saturation of vitamin C in their body, they will spill over vitamin C in the urine. So I need to see some urinary vitamin C to know that the person has maximal vitamin C. Not optimizing your vitamin C or not optimizing any nutrient for that matter is equivalent to you having, let's say, a hole in your roof in your home and you fix 95% of it. That's a disaster after a single rainstorm. So I think you get the picture. Then there are tests for antioxidants, but the best tests for antioxidants are not measuring the individual blood, I should say serum or plasma level of the vitamin. There is a urine test called malonyldialdehyde, or MDA, which is an overall test of oxidative stress. You provide someone with the right antioxidants, their MDA level goes way down or disappears. Vitamin D, serum levels of vitamin D, that fat-soluble nutrient, vitamin D3, is an accurate test. But I'm talking specifically about vitamin D3, what's called the 25-dihydroxyvitamin D. That is an accurate vitamin D test for need, as is the vitamin D3 1,25-dihydroxy test, which is very important for cancer. We want our vitamin D level to be at least a 70 on a 30 to 100 nanogram per milliliter range. A peripheral blood smear. Looking at blood under a microscope tells us quite a bit about our nutritional needs. For example, large red blood cells are a potentially accurate test for deficiencies of B6, B12, and folic acid, much more accurate than a serum or plasma level of B6, B12, and folic acid. The reason is, when someone's deficient in one or more of those B vitamins, the red blood cell enlarges, and like a muscle that enlarges in the gym with every rep, it gets weaker and less effective and more prone to injury. So you supply activated forms of those particular nutrients, methylated B12, methylated folic acid, the active form of B6 known as P5P, until the red blood cell goes down to normal size. Another very good test for whether or not your body uses B12 normally is homocysteine. Homocysteine is a toxic amino acid, which is a metabolite of a metabolic process gone wrong when one does not have enough B12. Another test known as serum methylmalonic acid is also good for B12 use, but is particularly good for how well someone uses folic acid. I'll just make brief mention about pH as a test. The next show is all about pH, but we want to talk about blood pH. So blood pH is a test that can help with nutritional balancing. A few more examples of the best tests. Since vitamin C is so important, let me just quickly go over that again and add some additional information. So vitamin C levels are levels in the blood, serum levels, only reflect recent intake of vitamin C, not long-term. Tissue levels are what we want, but there's no accurate test for vitamin C tissue levels. So I do a vitamin C loading test and then look for spillover of vitamin C in the urine. That is best. Biotin, a B vitamin, is best checked by looking at a certain enzyme known as beta hydroxyisovalerate. When that is elevated, one needs more biotin. As far as folic acid, which I mentioned earlier, Serum is not a good test. If the homocysteine or methylmalonic acid levels are elevated, a person generally needs more folic acid, no matter what the vitamin levels in the blood are. This is where many people and many uneducated healthcare providers get confused. They think as long as there's enough in the blood, there's enough in the tissues. That statement is so wrong, it couldn't be further from the truth. And in fact, the answer is generally opposite. If you have high levels in the blood, you may have high levels in the blood because the levels are low in the tissue. Or you might have high levels in the blood because they're also high in the tissue. So you have to do the right test and several connected tests read by the right person to figure this out. For vitamin B6, there are different enzyme tests that tell us if you're using vitamin B6 normally. We don't want to use just a serum test. For vitamin B2, riboflavin, we could look at what's known as red blood cell glutathione reductase levels, which is a vitamin B2-dependent enzyme. So the enzyme activity will be slowed if B2 is deficient or isn't being used properly, and measuring the level of a B vitamin in the serum or plasma is just a level. Think of it this way. A level is equivalent to counting up how many people showed up at your workplace today. But a functional test is how well people perform their jobs. I tend to do functional testing because of the reasons I've just stated. It makes more sense. We know it's correct. Vitamin B12, which I've mentioned a few times, the single best test for that is the size of a red blood cell viewed under a microscope. The cell would generally be very large because B12 does not get in it. Vitamin D3, again, I've mentioned that. I'll mention it again. The serum happens to be an accurate test for D3. For vitamin E, levels are somewhat important, but you want to know if that vitamin E is oxidized or not. So we measure vitamin E along with malonyldialdehyde, which is called MDA in the urine, which is an oxidative marker. And as far as vitamin K, a lot of people ask me about that. We want to check what are called prothrombin and certain clotting time assay tests, not merely just levels of vitamin K. So what I've done over the last hour or so is explored the need for testing, the appropriate vitamin tests, and many of the truths and lies relative to vitamins and nutrition. So I've put together what I call a blood detective longevity panel that includes accurate nutritional testing so that we can bypass the vitamin lies and get to the vitamin truths, what you need when you need them. Please send me more of your questions. Post them on my blog at www.integratednutritionny.com or at blooddetective.com. You can email me at info@blooddetective.com. I will take these questions and I'll make a show out of them. Our next show, next Saturday at 1 o'clock and every Saturday at 1 o'clock, is entitled pH Lies. Everything you think you know about pH is probably wrong. So you'll want to tune in for that one. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dr. Michael Wall, the original blood detective. I can be reached at 914-242-8844. And as a final reminder, you can go to the PRN archives for this show and my prior show, or you can go to my blog and you can listen to the show there. And you can read the notes from the show. Take care, and I'll talk to you next time. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you.